The views and opinions expressed during the drive time with Dave Glover are those of Dave and his guests, and not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment for Dave? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now, here's Dave.
Thank you, Danielle. Maureen McGovern, we're going to play into... this is a song I like to play after Election Day. Anyway, news from the Ontario government has been emailed to me today. Always happy to get emails from the Ontario government's press office. They just love me over there. Anyway, news today. Ontario is opening their additional 404 extensions. That's right. Set to reopen. A 13-kilometer extension of the 404 from Green Lane to Ravenshoe Road that will make it faster, easier to travel in and out of the GTA, reduce congestion, and create jobs by getting people and goods moving. The new four-lane extension will also take up to 22,000 vehicles a day of local roads, off the local roads, making the community safer while reducing travel times for commuters and commercial travelers. Improving highways, roads, and bridges across the province is a key part of the government's economic plan to invest in people, create jobs, and build modern infrastructure supporting a dynamic and innovative business climate. So there you go. Here's a few quick facts, by the way. The $100 million project created and sustained 1,000 jobs. Those are all good, high-paying jobs. Ontario has 16,900 kilometers of highways and 2,800 bridges. And Ontario is investing $2.5 billion in road and bridge construction projects this year, creating or sustaining an additional 25,000 jobs. So good on you. Kudos. Folks will be happy to be able to use those extensions, I'm sure. Much happier than the folks are in Montreal. That's right. The new Champlain Bridge is going to be built, but there's going to be a toll of between $2.60 and $3.90 on the federally owned bridge. This is a bridge that's very, very, very important. The people of Montreal are not happy. Tom Mulcair, apoplectic in the House today, talking about tolls. This is a bridge owned and operated by the federal government. There's never been a toll on the bridge before, ever. The federal government was responsible to maintain the bridge, but now they've got to rebuild the entire structure. The Harper government has been adamant, however, that if there's no tolls, there will be no bridge. The bridge is to be built through a public-private partnership, meaning revenue from tolls would cover the cost of building and maintaining the bridges. Private-public partnerships. Yes, we in Ontario know what that means. We have the 407. That was built with public money and sold to private interests. Nothing fishy there. Joining me this afternoon in the chair, Rob Washburn. Rob Washburn, who is an e-journalist professor at Loyalist College. He also hosts his own consider-this.ca. That's the website you can go to and check out some of the great stuff that he's got going on, some great news, as well as some of the interviews that he and I have done. I believe they're all up there, aren't they, Rob?
That's right, Dave.
So you can check out the podcasts if you'd like. And I think I might see if we can get our own webmaster, Colin Whitehouse, to link that with our new site here at Northumberland 89.7, which is up, by the way. Folks can go to northumberland89.7.ca, check out our new website. And I think we have news feeds going through there right now on the podcast. But we're going to see what we can do about getting some of these shows here up on the podcast. Today we're going to talk about municipal elections, municipal politics, who's running where, and, you know, see if we can parse out why. And we'll get the results right now from the last municipal election. In Cramie Township, Mark Coombs was elected with 1,383 votes. That's it, 1,383. Ellie Dickerson, she was his competition in that one. She got 1,161 votes. In Hamilton Township, Mark Levshin was acclaimed. In Port Hope, we know Linda Thompson became the mayor with 2,467 votes. That's it, less than 3,000 votes gets you the mayor's chair, apparently, in Port Hope. And in Trent Hills, Hector McMillan got 3,721 votes over Bob Fudge, who got 2,282. So, again, good turnout there in Trent Hills. Hector McMillan got more votes than Linda Thompson, for goodness sake. As far as county council is concerned, we know who the mayors that were elected, the mayor of Alden McCollum, Dalton McDonald, the mayor of Brighton, Mark Wallace, Gil Brockenier here in Coburg, Mark Coombs in Cramie, Mark Levshin, of course, Hamilton Township, Port Hope's Linda Thompson, and Heck McMillan in Trent Hills. Now, we're looking primarily at West Northumberland. Alden McCollum elected Dalton McDonald. We got 899 votes. This is crazy stuff. The Brighton mayor got 2,660 votes. Not huge numbers. These are not huge numbers. We're saying basically that it can take you, as far as Gil Brockenier, let's look at what his numbers were. Do we know what his numbers were in 2010?
It should be there. You've got them in front of you.
Let's see here. Nope, I don't have Coburg. Oh, hold on. I do have Coburg. There it is. The page goes up. 4,408 votes gave Gil Broconier the mayor's chair over Manfred Schumann, who got 1,937. So it looks like in Coburg, you need at least 4,500 votes to unseat the incumbent. That's what it's going to take. Now, we got three people running in Coburg this time around, though.
We do. In fact, you know, you and I got talking about this in advance of the show, that we noticed there's a large number of people running this time around. In fact, in Coburg, this time around, we have 18 people running compared to 11 in 2010. So we have seven more people running. In Port Hope, we have exactly the same number of people running, 21 and 21 from the last time. But what's interesting is that you have Ward 1 this time being heavily contested, and you've got two acclamations for Ward 2, whereas last time there were it was contested.
It's true. Both of the people that are running for Ward 2 council have, in essence, been elected. So you should probably get to know who those two people are. We got their names, by the way?
Sure we do. The people who were acclaimed for Port Hope. Or what? Let me just find it. Oh, there they are. Louise Ferrier Blecher and George Burns. Am I pronouncing those right?
Louise Ferrier Blecher and George Burns. Both acclaimed. Those are your two Ward 2 councillors in the upcoming municipal government. They have been acclaimed, ladies and gentlemen. So, again, you want to get to know those folks if you're living in Ward 2. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you may want to look them up.
Now, what's interesting is, just to start to break it down, you were mentioning earlier that this time we have three candidates, Gil Broconier, Miriam Mouton, and Don Kirkup, three candidates. Last time there was two, is Manfred and Gil Broconier. Last time, the deputy mayor's position was acclaimed with Stan Frost. Mm-hmm. This time there's three candidates, John Henderson, Paul Paganello, and Donna Todd. Now, on council, there's 12 people running, and last time there was nine.
I just got to throw a quick correction in there. One of my avid listeners, and my dog is losing her mind right now. It's Greg Burns, by the way, not George Burns. Greg Burns, not George Burns, for Ward 2 in Port Hope.
We've also got 12 people running for council in Coburg as compared to nine. Incumbents include Larry Sherwin, Forrest Rowden, and the rest of the seats are open. So it's gonna be an interesting race. I don't know. Now, you ran for council the last time.
I did,
and I'm curious as to what does it take for these people when they're running, particularly with these kinds of numbers. What does it take to run a campaign?
Well, you should put a team together. You should do some fundraising out there. But the most important thing is door knocking, and getting yourself out there, knocking on the doors. And, I mean, I managed to knock on many, many, many doors here in Coburg. There's a few areas in town where, I mean, you can get a list of where the big numbers for votes were coming from in terms of the various polling stations. That's probably not going to be available this time because of the online voting, but we did have that information available to us when we campaigned the last time in 2010. So we were able to focus, or I was able to focus, with the couple of people that I had out campaigning for me. And I'll be honest with you, I did not put a team together. You know, I went at it as more of an ad hoc candidate, I guess, don't get me wrong, I was running to win a seat on council, but by the same token, I was looking to run as lean a campaign as I possibly could. And obviously, running lean, it didn't get me elected. So, you know, I mean, I would definitely urge people to put a team together if you're going to be doing door knocking. You want to have people making phone calls on your behalf as well. Maybe putting together a fundraising list or a fundraising letter and inviting people to some functions, which some of the council candidates are, in fact, doing this time around.
Well, it's interesting because you ran against eight other people. There was nine candidates who ran for council. This time there's 12. Also in Port Hope, there's 12. There was 12 last time.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like, I mean, having that many people banging up against you in competition to try and get people's attention and to try and get people's votes?
Well, for me, it wasn't that difficult because I think I can consider myself a different style of candidate. I mean, a lot of them had, you know, the usual, I just want to bring transparency, I want to be your voice. But I was more interested in actually listening to what people had to say, what their concerns were, not just, you know, spewing the usual political rhetoric. And I think that did make me stand out. I know when I spoke at some of the all-candidate meetings that I was able to stand out in those particular functions, only because I was able to make myself a different choice. And that's part of getting yourself elected, is making sure that people understand that you're not just a status quo candidate, that you are, in fact, bringing something new, something more. And the other thing people really appreciate, too, is the energy that you bring, right?
That's really interesting because when you think about provincial and federal elections, mm-hmm. they're usually associated with a party.
That's right.
And municipal, there is no party. So how is that different? I mean, you've been around politics, a mm-hmm. lot of different levels of politics. How do you think it's different when you have a party representing your interests versus, say, being like yourself, an independent?
Well, if you do have a party, obviously the party can help you put together a team, people who are within the riding that normally support that party. If you're able to connect with them, then you will get their support generally. If you're running at a municipal level without the party status, what you're trying to do is connect with everyone. It really is a nonpartisan position because you've got to be able to connect with conservatives, New Democrats, and liberals, and also people who are on the fringe as well, whether they're libertarians or not. And you have to make sure that your message is clear and very specific, not necessarily to the needs of those specific sectors, but to the overall needs of everyone. Because eventually, you know, even if you're a liberal or conservative or a New Democrat, if it's a good idea, you're going to support it, right?
Sure. And then the other thing, too, with provincial and federal is you always have a leader that mm-hmm. can either make or break you as a candidate. I mean, if you have a strong leader, and oftentimes in provincial elections, federal elections, we concentrate a lot on the leadership. Mm-hmm. So when we go to the polling booth, are we really voting for the local candidate or are we voting for Stephen Harper or Mulcair or Trudeau? You know, that's the kind of different dynamic. Mm-hmm. And instead of going, as you just said, you know, let's get to know these people. We got to get to know them really, really well. That's how they get our attention.
Exactly.
What about incumbency? I know there's a lot of talk that incumbency makes a big difference at this level because, you know, you get, you know, we all know who Gil Brockmeyer is. We all know who Miriam Mouton is. But maybe we don't know Don Kirkup as well. And some of these, you know, John Floyd ran second to mm-hmm. Linda Thompson last time when he ran. You mentioned that his numbers. Well, here he is again. He's another mayoral candidate. How does name recognition play into it, and how does incumbency play into it?
Well, I think if people know who you are before you get into the race, they've got an understanding. They may or may not like you. If they do like you, there's a real good chance just from the name recognition, oh, I know that guy. I'm going to vote for him. You know, and we've got some candidates on our current slate here. I mean, Wayne DeVoe, whose wife was a counselor at one point, Gail. You know, he's got name recognition. Now, does he have name recognition because he's been on council before? Not necessarily, but he still carries that with him, that name recognition. Same thing with Larry Sherwin, with Forrest Rowden. But, you know, you've got other candidates like my sister-in-law, Teresa Rickerby, for instance. She's a high-profile candidate only because she's been in business. She's been a downtown business owner for 15 years now. She's expanded her operation. She's been very responsive to the needs of the community in terms of providing them with service. But she's also been able to use her entrepreneurial acumen, if you will, to find efficiencies in her own business. And when you've got someone who's capable of doing that for themselves and for keeping their own business going and remaining a very vital business in the downtown, you can pretty much guarantee that that person's going to bring that same acumen to their position as a counselor, you know, finding efficiencies, focusing on those economic issues. And that's something she brings to the table. And again, she's got the name recognition from being in business for a long time. Now, she does have an advantage over some candidates, say like Aaron Burkett, for instance, who's a young man. He may not be as well known here in Coburg. But, you know, other guys like Dave Black, for instance, or Brian Darling. I mean, a lot of people know who Brian Darling is. The man was with the fire service for 30 years. As he said, the town has basically taken care of him through his professional life by employing him. He wants to give something back. That's the message he's putting out there. You know, Wayne DeVoe says he just wants to be a part of the process. You know, again, these are things that people want to hear. You know, but some of the candidates, you know, Gudrun Ludorff Weaver, she was a candidate for the Green Party in the provincial election. Not a lot of people actually know who she is. Does she have the clout to be able to draw in those supporters? That's going to be yet to be determined, I think.
So it's interesting because, you know, in provincial and federal politics, you have the party, which gives you a core support. Mm-hmm. In municipal, that's not available. You don't have the core. And yet, in some ways, you do, because you do have those people that you bring along, your friends, your family, mm-hmm. people who have known your work, they support you, and those people line up behind you, and that gives you a bit of a core. So then what happens in between? And I guess that's what you were talking about earlier, about door knocking, getting out there, introducing yourself to people. Mm-hmm. I remember there was an old politician, Williams, and he used to go around and he said he would knock on every door two to three times, every door in his in the municipality he was running. He ran in Hamilton Township, mm-hmm. he ran in Coburg, 2 to 3 times every door just to make sure that he got his message through. And that's mm-hmm. where the impact comes from.
The other thing that some of the candidates are going to be focusing on is phone calls, calling people. Because the real important thing for a candidate, and I didn't focus on this, and this is probably one of the things that was my detriment, was that on election day, I didn't bother to follow up. I didn't bother spending election day calling people. And again, with IntelliVote, you get to vote. You can vote for 7 days, basically, right? It's a 7-day window with IntelliVote. So really what you need to do is call people for the week of the election. Continue to call them. Hi, I'm calling on behalf of the Dave Glover campaign. Just wanted to see if you'd voted yet. Maybe did you need some help with IntelliVote? We can walk you through the process, things like that, or direct you to the town website to show you how to get through the process. And again, by calling people, by allowing them to hear your name as often as possible, either as a door knock or a telephone call, it keeps your name in the fore. It allows people to remember that. Now, if you were an annoyance, if you were that annoying guy who knocked on their door during dinner or you phoned them during dinner, they're going to remember that too. And they may think not to support you. But you really have to focus on, that's something your team can do though, right? If you do put a team together. And that's something I would recommend. If I was to run again, I would definitely focus my energies on putting together a strong team that could not just door knock for me, but could work the telephones for me on my behalf to ensure people, A, got out to vote, and B, remembered who I was.
Now, compared to larger municipalities like Toronto, where I think it's over 200 candidates just for mayor alone, they talk about core candidates and they talk about fringe candidates. Mm-hmm. In smaller municipalities, I wonder to what extent do we have the same sort of phenomena? Are there core candidates and are there fringe candidates?
Well, that's a really good question. I think your core candidates are people who are running for re-election. Your incumbent candidates tend to be your core candidates. But there are people who've built support within the community. I mean, you know, I'm not going to discount Don Kirkup, because Don Kirkup has run in the past. He's also been an entrepreneur in the downtown. He's also been a very vocal supporter and an opponent of various things the town has done. So he's kept his name out there. Right. So I don't believe that makes him a fringe candidate. I think that does make him, in fact, a core candidate, because he's somebody who's known. And I think a fringe candidate is probably someone, if he is known or if she is known, is probably not known for the best.
But press. What about on the council side and on the school board trustees? We haven't talked much about them. What about those kind of candidates? I mean, you've got 12 people running for both councils in Port Hope and Cobourg. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of people to stand out. Do you think there's any of those people that are sitting on the fringe? Are there fringe candidates there?
I'm going to say for sure that there most likely is, because that's just the way it is with I mean, a lot of people run because they're not happy with something the town has done either in the past year or over the 4 years. You know, I mean, the two candidates in Ward 2 are probably really good examples, because I believe now I could be wrong, and give me a call if I am, 905-372-2321. But I believe Louise Blecker was part of that Ward 2 group that were saying, you know, we're getting hooped by Ward 1. We need better representation, or we need to get out of the amalgamation. Now, I believe that was something that Louise was a part of. I'm not sure about Mr. Burns, but those are people who have taken an issue, whether it's the amalgamation or to de-amalgamate, and made that their platform.
See, I think there's a difference between a fringe candidate and then somebody being disruptive. And I wonder sometimes, you know, there are people who sort of sit on the edge. They come in with good intentions. Mm-hmm. They have a very small core of people that are going to back them, and they're going to try and get their name out and do the best they can. But then there are others, like what you're talking about, where they have an agenda, mm-hmm. and they want to get in there and they want to just mix things up. They want to bring up issues that are their hobby horse, and they mm-hmm. want to get on and bring those issues to the forefront. And this is one way that they can do that. They know they don't have a chance to win. They know the other candidates are stronger. And I wonder, to some extent, you know, you said you take Don Kirkup very seriously. I wonder if Don Kirkup doesn't have an element of that he's come into it to be disruptive.
I want to clarify that, because I don't necessarily agree with that statement with regards to Don Kirkup. I just think that there's probably a core constituency within the community who knows him, who remember him from before, who think, you know, he might not be a bad choice. I was speaking to my wife, who was speaking to an elderly woman on King Street the other day.
Sure.
Who said, well, that Don Kirkup guy, he's got all the numbers. He seems to know what he's talking about. He really is able to put his, and he's passionate about what he's talking about. And I think he's probably right. Now, it's been shown that some of his numbers may be a little hinky, and there may be some question as to the validity of some of his numbers. But he's managed to convince at least that person, and maybe even many more people who are of the same mind as that woman.
Okay, so that being the given thing, though, I guess my point is he really coming in, though, to be disruptive? And do you think in being disruptive and getting certain items on the agenda mm-hmm. and mixing things up, what kind of an impact is that going to have on the mayoralty race mm-hmm. in Cobourg?
Well, you know, Ben Bird put it, I think Ben Bird put it pretty succinctly in the Bird Report about a week ago when he said that Mayor Brockenier can probably just go on a holiday up to the and leading to the campaign, because with Don Kirkup in there, the theory is that he's going to split the vote with Miriam Mouton, that Gil Brockenier has his core of support, that those people will show up, they will vote, they will support him. But there's no thought that Don Kirkup or Miriam Mouton are going to take any of those votes away from Gil Brockenier. So really, if he is being disruptive, if he is going to split a vote, some people would think, and I don't know if this necessarily is what I've been thinking because I haven't given a whole lot of thought to it. At this point, quite honestly, I have no idea who I'm going to support in the upcoming mayoral election. But I do think that Don Kirkup and Miriam Mouton may well split their own vote.
That's interesting because I look at it and I wonder if they come in very much with their own cores. I agree with you. I think each of them brings a very strong core that's going to back them. The numbers, who knows? But that core vote that they bring, so where is the difference going to be made? And it, again, we've talked about knocking on doors, getting those undecided people and mobilizing those people to get out and to vote for them. But Kirkup could be sort of the one person that could be explosive. He could raise issues that the other two may not be wanting to get into. He could back them into a corner, and they could do damage to themselves. And I see him as being the sort of the unknown element that could really turn this race into something unexpected because they could step on each other.
I think you're right, because I think what could happen with Don Kirkup, I mean, just from basically on the information that he's putting out there, I mean, the reality is there are issues that he's wanting to bring to the fore that he wants to talk about that, quite frankly, Miriam Mouton and Gil Brockenier don't want discussed during the campaign because they know they'll be contentious, they know they'll be explosive, and it may come back to bite them on the butt. Whereas Don Kirkup, I honestly don't know that Don Kirkup is genuinely wanting to be the mayor of Coburg. I don't have the feeling that Don Kirkup wants to be the mayor of Coburg. I think Don Kirkup, and this is my only opinion here, I think Don Kirkup is running because he wants to be the guy who's poking the bear. And I think he wants people to either come down on one side or the other. I don't honestly believe that Don Kirkup thinks he's going to be the next mayor of Coburg.
All right. So I see that as being a disruptive candidate. Then are there similar types of candidates in Port Hope? I mean, you know, when you look down that list and you know we're looking at
We've got Paul Andrus, John Bickle, Jamie Manuel Castillo, Robert Chatton, John Floyd, Julie Mavis, and Bob Sanderson all running, all apparently wanting to be the mayor. A couple of these guys have actually campaigned in the past, I believe, but I may be wrong on that. I think Robert Chatton campaigned last time around. He got 156 votes in the last election. But I think he's the only other candidate that ran in the last municipal election for that job.
And interestingly enough, there is no incumbent. So there's nobody, there's no legacy here. This is who are we going to choose to lead us into the future? So, I mean, how does that change the dynamic then, first of all?
Well, I again, you know what, really, you have to look at the numbers. And sorry, I got to apologize to John Floyd there because he also ran the last time around. And he had a pretty good showing as well. He came in pretty close second there to Linda Thompson. I think there in that situation, I think you probably got a lot of people, a lot of candidates who are relatively new to the community, who want to see some differences that they may not be seeing from the current government, and they don't want to see the status quo. And so that's probably one of the main reasons why they're running is to change things, because they're not quite happy with the way things are going. Now, John Floyd, on the other hand, is a guy who has campaigned in the past, and he does have a lot of municipal experience. He's been a CAO and stuff like that, I understand. Or I apologize. No, that was the other candidate who dropped out. But I think John Floyd, I mean, here's a guy who's not really focusing on issues, right? I mean, he's the guy who was in the chair talking about how we've got to right the ship. And he sounded like Rob Ford when he was in here talking about essentially getting rid of the gravy train and shutting off the flow of easy money and all of this other stuff because the town has a willingness to spend money. And that's something people want to hear. That is something people want to hear. I mean, that's why Rob Ford got elected, right? The position that so many people are just wasting so much money. And that was why Ben Bird hit him with the very first question, which was, okay, John, who are you going to fire first?
Well, interestingly enough, though, you've got a very dynamic citizenship in Port Hope. You've got ratepayers groups. You've got other organizations that do bring together. And Port Hope people mobilize, and they're very passionate about their politics over there. So, you know, I think over there it's going to be a tough race. I don't think anybody's going to get a break, and I think they're going to all come under the microscope. No question about it. Now, what about Hamilton Township? In Hamilton Township, we've got Mark Lubshin and Donna Cole, both running for mayor. Now, last time, Mark was acclaimed, and Donna Cole, a previous been previously involved in politics. We've got Gary Woods and John Davidson duking it out for deputy mayor. And then we've got Pat McCourt, Mary Giffer, Janine Huffman, and Bill Kane and Scott Gibb running for council. Now, last time there were 8 candidates. This time there's only 5.
Mm-hmm. How many seats do they have, though?
5 overall.
So there's 5 seats
in total. So mayor, deputy mayor, and 3 deputy.
So there's only 3 council seats open then.
I think I got that right.
Of that. Well, I'm sure if we don't, we'll hear from Pat. She'll give us a call or something like that. And by the way, if you have any questions or comments, you'd like to get involved in the conversation, please give us a call at 905-372-2321 or 905-372-2391. Always happy to take calls from our listeners, especially folks who are longtime residents who, you know, can give us a feel on who some of these candidates are. And because I'll be honest with you, for the most part, I don't know these people. I know Mark Levshin. I met Mark Levshin, you know, just in passing. But I can't say I know any of these people, except perhaps Pat McCourt.
There hasn't been a lot of publicity or a lot of media coverage around Hamilton Township Council. There has been some, but there's been a lot of strife up there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been a hard term. There's been a lot of dissension. Levshin has struggled at times to try and control the council and to get the agenda that he wants, and he has not always got his way. Mm-hmm. They've had staffing issues up there, which I think are starting to slowly settle down, and they're getting some stability. I mean, they're going to have the former Hope Township knocking on the door, Ward 2 knocking on the door. They're talking, they're interested in joining up. I don't know. Nothing's much has been said about whether Hamilton wants to join with them. But still, I mean, there's lots coming on their plate. So it'd be interesting to see how this is all going to play out once it comes election day.
No, absolutely. And again, you know, we had Pat in here earlier today because she was talking about what came down at the county planning meeting that happened today about some of the changes that were going to occur. And apparently things have come down on the side of Hamilton Township. The people that spoke up about certain changes got it. They managed to stop those changes. So, again, being open, being active, being communicative is something that works for people if they get involved. Now, one of the points that she brought up, Pat McCourt, was that the town doesn't really issue a lot of press releases. They don't send out anything through the mail to any of their residents too often. Communications is really a huge issue with the area of Hamilton Township, and that's something she wants to fix. And as we've seen, if people do get information and are able to communicate, they can affect change, i.e. what happened today at County Council. So, again, I think part of the problem for Mark Levshin and for the county or for the council up there is going to be this perception that they just aren't either willing to or aren't able to communicate with the residents in a very committed or constructive way. And that's something that's going to be a problem probably for Mark Levshin. I don't know Donna Cole. I don't know how well she's known up there in the area. But, you know, people in Hamilton Township might be thinking it's time for a change as well.
I've spoken with Cole, and a very strong politician, very solid. She ran last time for council, and I think she's definitely a player, and I think she wants to bring a different kind of leadership to Hamilton Township. Gary Woods, he ran last time for council. This time he's running for deputy mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Pat McCourt ran last time and was unsuccessful. So it'll be interesting to see if she has been
a counselor up there in the past.
Yes, she has.
So that's probably something that's going to bode well for her. And she and you know, we talked about what does it take to get elected. I mean, she has been actively campaigning since even probably before the summer. She's been getting out there. She's been going to public functions. She's been attending council meetings, and she's been getting the word out to people about what's happening in those meetings. So again, she's been a great source of information and communications for the people up in Hamilton Township.
Absolutely.
But on that note, I mean, the reality is if you can't get the information about your candidates and your candidate isn't coming to your door, chances are that candidate isn't going to go too far. You know, I mean, you talk about candidates with specific issues. There are some people who are talking about John Lee, for instance, who's a developer here in Coburg. And some people are concerned that maybe he's running because he wants to drive forward his development agenda. And as a town councillor, he thinks he might be able to get things that he might not otherwise be able to get as a private citizen. So there are some people who think that he's running on a specific agenda to get his way. Is that going to work for him? Who knows? But again, that's the perception, right? And we're not hearing anything from some of these other candidates, right?
We were talking earlier about campaigns, and one of the things that is a hallmark to campaigning is our dirty tricks. We hear about them all the time.
Yeah.
Did you have any experience with that?
I didn't. No, I didn't have anyone taking my signs down or anything like that. But I think I was – I got to say this. I got to put this out there for the listeners, and maybe I'm right and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think too many people thought of me as a problem candidate. Sometimes you have candidates who are, oh, I'm not going to vote for that guy. That guy's just going to get in there and mix stuff up and create problems. I think I was thought of as a candidate who was thoughtful, who was willing to talk to people. People know that I'm very political and that I do my research when it comes to politics and issues. So I don't think that was a problem for a lot of people. I think as far as the other candidates were concerned, I think some of the other candidates were concerned that maybe I was a little too effervescent, maybe a little too energetic, maybe a little hyper. And they were thinking that, you know, do we want a guy who's going to be that focused? Because, again, that's what it takes, right? Focus. Do we really want a guy that's that focused to be sitting on council who's going to be, you know, I mean, some people even compare me to sort of a male version of Miriam Mouton, a kind of guy who's not just going to follow the status quo, who's not just going to do the rubber stamp, who's actually going to look at things and go, yeah, you know what, I would support this, but I want this, this, and this. And if we don't get those things, then they're not going to, then it's not going to happen. So all in all, I don't think there was a negative perception about my campaign anyway.
Well, I've heard there's all kinds. I mean, we talked. You mentioned earlier about signs. You know, mm-hmm. there's often allegations of signs. It's interesting also to note that there are bylaws around signs and where signs can be put and where they can't be put.
That's right.
So you know, they could that can be play a part of it. We just saw John Moran went through a whole nasty business with his mm-hmm. signs. Now the other thing though is sometimes candidates will follow each other into certain neighborhoods. So you know, you'll go first, and your campaign will drop literature into people's mailboxes. Mm-hmm. I'll come in behind you, and I'll pull out all your literature and put mine in its place. I mean, I've heard stories of that going on as well.
Well, you know what, I'm gonna speak to that, because actually that did happen to me. I did in fact have that happen. I actually went into the Westwood area, and I was campaigning up there. And I was knocking on doors, and when I didn't get an answer, I'd leave a leaflet in the mailbox. And then I went back through the neighborhood to try and contact the people who didn't answer the doors. And when I did, I said, oh, you may have got my leaflet in the mailbox. Oh, I didn't get your leaflet. It wasn't in my mailbox. Oh, and, of course, the only leaflet they got was the one that was placed there by the person who was behind me. And I thought, I didn't want to come right out and say, geez, are they taking my leaflets out of there? Because, I mean, they cost me money, you know what I mean? And I was running a shoestring campaign. Now, you couldn't clearly point the finger at any one person that was doing that. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely think that that was something that was going on. Maybe not solely with my literature, maybe with some of the literature of some of the other people's. But, again, that does happen, right? I mean, people don't want you to get your message out there, and they'll do everything they can to help make that not happen.
Does a 21st century campaign, should it have social media? Should it be online?
I think it should. You should definitely have social media. You've definitely got to have a Facebook. I mean, everybody and their brother-in-law has Facebook now. I don't do Facebook. I do Twitter. So I would opt for Twitter. But even Facebook, I mean, Facebook allows you to, you know, if you attended an event, you can put that picture up there. If you have a new platform issue, you can put that right up there. People who follow you on Facebook can just jump right on that. And I think a lot more people are turning to online in terms of getting information about people. Excuse me. So, I mean, something as simple as, oh, well, so who's so-and-so? Oh, he's running? Then you just go over to Google and you punch his name in and you see what he's done, what news is available for him, what press releases, what good news has come through as well. So, again, those are all things that people are going to utilize. And I think if the general public is going to utilize that, then it is incumbent upon any of the candidates out there to do just that.
You'd be shocked to know that most urban candidates do have these things. I was surprised. We were doing some work down at the college. I'm surprised in the rural areas mm-hmm. how few use social media. And, in fact, there were even some that didn't even have a website.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting how, you know, the more traditional types of campaigns tend to ignore these sorts of things. And yet I agree with you. I mean, you know, if you're a candidate, you should be tweeting everything you're doing, mm-hmm. everything that's going on. Social media, as you say, it's one of the more important ways to do it. To connect with voters. And voters now, you know, we can't all get out. We can't get to get all our questions answered. Maybe we miss you at the door.
You might.
This is one of these ways that you can connect with campaigns. So it'll be interesting to see. I haven't looked into
well,
see
other
how many
thing,
have,
And the
have
other
got.
Thing I'm going to suggest the candidates do is, you know, show up at the public functions. I mean, you know, yesterday, for instance, Miriam Mouton did her announce at the library, right? Now, it wasn't a public event. It wasn't an all-candidates debate or anything like that. But some other candidates who are running for council actually went to that event so that they could be there and be public. Now, is that a public showing that you're going to support Miriam Mouton? No. It's just your ability to take that public event and use it to your advantage. Now, you don't want to show up at the very beginning. You don't want to horn in on the presentation, but it's okay to be there at the back end when people are coming out going, oh, you know, nice to see you. I'm so and so. I'm Dave Glover. I'm running for council, by the way. And, you know, I just thought I'd show up tonight and introduce myself to you while the candidate was making their announcement. Again, you know, it doesn't show that you're running with that person or you necessarily agree with what that person's doing, but it is another opportunity for you to get your name out there.
It's interesting. I noticed with a lot more formal launches and formal opening of offices and this kind of stuff to garner public attention and media attention. Do you think councillors need to be doing this sort of thing? Do you think school board trustees need to be doing this sort of thing, or is that a little over the top?
I would like to see that happen with school board trustees. I mean, the saddest thing about school board trustees, first of all, they get the lowest number of votes. I mean, most people don't even vote for the trustee. I think they got 15% voter turnout in the last time around, if I remember correctly. And, I mean, sadly, what you tend to get is the incumbent just sort of gets reelected. And, I mean,
we've seen that with Gordon Gilchrist.
I mean, he's probably the freshest example that comes to my mind, because the reality is, you know, here's a guy who is, I mean, he's an older man. Let's face it. He's an older gentleman. He was in Brian Mulroney's cabinet, right? So here's a guy who's been around forever. And, you know, it does beg the question, when is enough with Gord Gilchrist? How often do we have to continue to see this guy? And is he just running for the seat because he needs the additional income? I mean, it really does beg the question, because, you know, he doesn't have any school-age kids. He may have school-age grandchildren or possibly great-grandchildren, but I don't really think it's incumbent upon anyone to vote for someone who, quite frankly, is out of the education loop. You know, and I mean, we're talking about a guy whose primary agenda is cost cutting, right? I mean, we knew, if you listened to Gord Gilchrist 5 years ago before the last municipal election, you would have known that one of our high schools was going to go the way of the buggy whip. You would have known that the goal here is to build one mega high school and have the mega public school and hopefully drive all the children there, because if you only have one building that you have to fund, support, and maintain, it's a lot cheaper for the school board. And I think that's what we're seeing. I mean, it's and that's not called finding efficiencies. That's called cutting corners, in my opinion.
Well, but yet he's got his voters, and
he does.
He wins consistently. So you know, don't be surprised if he gets in again, because. Oh. And yet he's got some competition.
He's got some challengers. Well, Janine Klassing Janenga, she ran last time as well.
That's right.
Okay, she came pretty close, I understand. I don't know about Mike Phillip. And Brad Mills, but I know that Janine and Gilchrist have been toe-to-toe once in the past, at least once in the past, maybe even twice in the past. But as far as the other candidates are concerned, like Chanel Latarala Shaheen, for instance, for the French Separate School Board, again, she's run a few times. Roger Bridot, I believe he's run a couple of times. But the problem with the Board of Education seats, whether they be Separate School Board, French Separate, or English Separate, or English Public, is a lot of people just don't vote for that person. They don't pick that person. As I say, only about 15% of the people that voted in the last municipal election actually chose a school board trustee. So, I mean, what's that say? That shows people that that's pretty low on the old scale of importance when it comes to what people are looking for when they vote. They're more focused on mayoral and council candidates than they are worried about their school board. And yet the school board, I mean, let's face it, you know, a lot of people think teachers are nothing more than a glorified daycare service. And it seems to ring true when only 15% of the population bothers to vote for those people. On that note, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back after we run some ads here. And please stick around. Rob Washburn is my guest today.
Head to the Royal Canadian Legion Branch, 133 in Cobourg, to catch these great events.
Every Thursday is Tall Boy Thursday. Ladies Tuesday happens once a month, and keep your eyes peeled for the meat draw every Friday and Saturday. If you've missed any of these events this month, be sure to catch them next month.
The Royal Canadian Legion is at 136 Orr Street in Cobourg. Call 905-372-2231 and become a member today.
Northumberland Players presents the Tony Award-winning God of Carnage, a play by Yasmina Reza, directed by Tim Russell. Called A Comedy of Manners Without the Manners, it's a story about two couples who meet to discuss a playground incident involving their sons. What starts as a civil discussion soon becomes anything but. We get to watch grown-ups in their version of the playground. Buttons are pushed, boundaries breached, and if we watch closely, we might see a bit of ourselves. At the Fire Hall Theater in Cobourg, September 19th through October 4th, sponsored by We Fix You Physiotherapy and Foot Health Centers in Cobourg and Port Hope, and by Declare's Butcher Shop in Cobourg's Westwood Plaza. For tickets, call 905-372-2210.
Community Care Northumberland has been giving strength through caring to the residents of Northumberland County for over 25 years. Experience a higher quality of life with the help of Community Care Northumberland, providing help with meals, making visits to your home, transportation services, palliative care, and more, all coordinated through Community Care Northumberland's 6 area offices. For more information about Community Care Northumberland, visit their website at comcare.ca. That's comcare.ca. Interested in volunteering? Give them a call at 1-866-514-5774. Community Care Northumberland is there for you and your family.
Wow, who is that?
That was Zedhead, man.
Those guys would be awesome live.
Well, you're in luck. Book your calendar, man. Saturday, September 27th.
You're kidding. Coburg?
That's right. Right here in Coburg. Northumberland 89.7. You know Trudy Local Radio, that station we've been listening
yes.
to? Well, guess what? They're doing a fundraiser at Frank's Pasta and Grill, and they're going to be featuring Zedhead.
Who else is playing?
Well, let me tell you, Zach Warner and Harmony Road are coming. Wild T and the Spirit. That's right, that Wild T. I mean, who can forget Wild T? The man was David Bowie's guitarist in the 1990s. He shared the stage with Deep Purple, The Doors, John Bon Jovi, Grand Funk Railroad, and Bon Jovi.
How much are the tickets? $100?
No, $10.
Wow.
$10. It's a fundraiser, I told you, for Northumberland 89.7, Saturday, September 27th. Where can you get the tickets? I know you're going to ask. Matthews Media, Northumberland Security, Zap Records, Ed White Appliance and Repair over in Port Hope. The doors open at 7 o'clock, man. Should I get you some tickets?
Get me a pair, man.
I'm standing with a crowd of the faithful outside Ed White's Appliance Repair on Mill Street in Port Hope, where they're waiting for the word. You could hear a pin drop as he raises his hand. He's about to speak. Let's listen.
Yes, it is worth fixing.
You heard it here. It is worth fixing. Are you a believer? Call Ed at 885-7109 and say, yes, I do believe.
Yes, I do. I too believe. Welcome back to The Drive Time. I'm Dave Glover. We got about 10 minutes left at the top of the hour here. Rob Washburn is my guest in the chair today. We're talking about municipal politics. We're talking about candidates. We're trying to put together, I guess what we're trying to do today is, and we're going to be coming back to this next week, by the way, where we're going to probably drill down and focus on a couple of the candidates and their platforms if we can get some information from those candidates and maybe focus on what some of the issues are. But right now we're talking about, you know, what does it take to run? What does it take to win in a municipal election?
Absolutely. And I think it's really interesting how municipal politics is such a different animal than provincial and federal politics. Without that party affiliation, without that party organization and funding, it's quite a different animal. How much did you spend on your campaign? Do you remember?
About $3,000.
These are expensive campaigns. Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, that's including the registration fee. That's including a few signs and the brochures I got out. But luckily for me, I was able to raise, I think, all but a few hundred dollars that I had to donate myself. But I was able to raise a good majority of that money from people within the community. They were more than happy to donate to my campaign. So, and I want to thank those people as well. You know, folks like Gord Kelly over at Kelly's Home Like Inn. You know, great supporter of myself because Gord's a political guy himself. I mean, and he's got a vested interest in who's on council, right? I mean, let's be frank. And, you know, people like Alex Rutherford over at Rutherford Financial, another supporter of mine. I didn't find it difficult to raise money, to be honest with you, because a lot of people thought, you know what, you're the kind of guy that people need on council. Yeah. You know, unfortunately for me, as I said, I probably didn't do enough door knocking, and I definitely didn't do any week of the vote telephone follow up. So those are things I would definitely consider doing next time I run.
But the other thing that's really good about municipal politics too is it's very accessible. I mean, you know, you don't need a lot of party experience. Mm-hmm. You know, there isn't the training; it isn't as polished, and it's good. And a lot of these people are fresh names, new people coming in that don't have a lot of experience, but they're gonna take a run at it. So it is more accessible for people, but it is a different creature. It is a different kind of animal.
Now, it is.
One thing we were talking about on the break was debates and these public events that you can mm-hmm. attend. What sort of public events did you find useful, say, just public events?
Well,
what about debates?
I didn't find the debates, to be honest with you, I didn't find the debates particularly useful. The debate at the high school that was sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce, didn't find that particularly useful. And the one at the library, the environmental sustainability meeting that people had, I found that was useful in some sense, but for the most part, it wasn't. Because, you know, first of all, there's not enough time to ask every candidate the same question, you know? And that tends to be what happens. You know, I have a question from the floor for XYZ candidate. Well, now that you've answered that XYZ, we'll let everyone else answer the same question. And again, that just eats up the time, and it allows the organizers, if you will, to direct the agenda and the style of questions that they want to have answered, rather than having answers from the public. Now, one of the things I said to you when we were here last week, and I've been invited to host an All Candidates function by Dan Christie, and what I'd like to do with that one, quite honestly, is run it sort of a Phil Donahue style. You remember when Phil Donahue would run out into the audience and he'd put the mic in front of a lady and go, "You have a question?" And then just put that question before the person and she's, you know, "I have a question for, you know, John Floyd. John, blah, 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 blah." I'm not going to put that same question to every other candidate. That question was for John Floyd. And then move on to the next guy. You have a question, you're going to move on to the next guy. And I think by being active and interactive with the audience, it gets the audience a little more excited. And also, you get rid of some of those, you know, frivolous questions. Because, of course, in those other things where people are, you know, you have to write down your question and it's put into a hat and then they pull out your question. I prefer the spontaneous questions that you're going to get from people. And if you're in the audience, and you know, if you're running it like an evangelical event, if you will, where you're getting the crowds whipped up and you're talking to them, you're going to get people who want to ask very specific questions. You're going to get to those persons, and they're going to be able to just pinpoint those candidates. So rather than allowing everyone to answer the same three questions, because that's all you ever really get to, right?
I also think, too, that it's important that there be a lot of information that's freely available. You know, you'll hear a lot of candidates talk about openness and transparency and accountability, and yet you go to their website, and all you get is an online pamphlet. And it, again, there's no opportunity to interact with these candidates. That's one of the nice things about social media is that, you know, if they open it up, you can put up questions. You can tweet to a candidate and say, "Hey, what about this or what about that?" I think those, you know, let's see the openness and the transparency at this level, not just a complaint that that's used to disrupt and to hold others accountable.
Well, and that tends to be the problem, because that's what you do get. You get, you know, it's an opportunity to come out and sling some mud at one or two of the candidates if that's what you want to do. And that's, in my opinion, that's not constructive and it's not useful. You know, if you want to have a one-on-one with someone where you're calling them out on something specific, then fine. Do that on your time, not on everyone else's time. Because everyone else who attends these meetings, or, you know, most of the ones who attend these meetings, are there because they want to have a better idea, a better understanding of who the candidates are. And if there's just someone in there who's just, you know, slinging the mud, then, you know, you're not going to get anywhere.
We're also very fortunate in this area, too. We have a lot of media. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we've got two newspapers that I'm sure are going to cover it. You've got shows like yours and others on this radio station. There are other television and radio stations that are covering these elections. I mean, there's going to be a lot of media out there as well.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because next week, I believe, TV Kojiko is hosting. They do a media scrum show once a month. I've actually been invited to attend on behalf of Northumberland 89.7 as a media representative. So we're going to be talking about the municipal elections on that show as well. So you're right. There's a great opportunity, a great number of opportunities for people to get information and to be engaged. And I think that's something that bodes well for us here in West Northumberland, that we have a very engaged group of folks who want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, having said that, you know, let's just hope that there's people who are paying attention.
Absolutely. And I think that's the most critical thing. It comes down to really you as a voter. I mean, it's how much energy are you going to put in? How much effort are you going to put in? Or are you just going to sit and sort of let this all wash over? I mean, when it only takes a couple hundred votes to get somebody into office, that's a pretty scary premise. So it's important that we all get out and we exercise our franchise.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think part of what we do here, I mean, just you and I doing this on a weekly basis, talking about this, making it a conversation. You know, people used to say, don't talk politics or religion in public. You know what? If you don't talk politics in public, people aren't engaged in the political process except for once every 4 years when they go, "Oh, yeah, right, I got to vote." If we can keep people engaged throughout, and that way when the election day does come around, they're not, you know, running around like chickens with their heads cut off looking for information on who and what. They're going to be aware of what issues are that are affecting them, what issues are that they'd like to see moved on in terms of an agenda. And they're going to be more willing to engage whoever it is that's running and maybe even want to run themselves.
Well, I think the 21st century campaign has to be about a conversation between the politicians and the public.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's great to have media and we do our best to try and dig down and get the answers. But really what it comes down to is when that person knocks on the door and you start talking to them and you get to ask them the questions directly or email them or Twitter them or put up a question on their post a question on their Facebook page or whatever it takes. I mean, getting out there and getting your questions answered. That's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the successful candidates are the ones that respond and give genuine, heartfelt, well-thought-out answers
mm-hmm.
and address the issues that matter. And that's the stuff that I think impresses voters.
Well, that's what impressed voters in Toronto about Rob Ford. I mean, say what you will about Rob Ford. If you called him, he would call you back. Rob Ford returned people's calls. And, you know, that was something I did. I had people who would call me during the campaign. You know, what do you think about this? I've just found out about this. What do you think about it? And I would, you know, look on the computer. Oh, yeah, you know what? I just see this here. It was put forth yesterday. And, yeah, you know what? That's definitely something we need to look at because obviously we can't rubber stamp some of these processes. And, you know, and again, by engaging people, by understanding what their concerns are and seeing if you can roll that into something that you can work with, you've got a way better chance of connecting with the voters and in turn having those voters support you.
Absolutely.
On that note, we're going to bring it to a close here. Of course, Mike Woods and the Northumberland Rock and Roll Experience is coming up very soon. It'll be up next, actually, right after this. So we're going to go to a quick track. We're going to play a little Harry Chapin for you, and then we're coming right back. Well, we won't be back. I'll be back tomorrow. And Rob Washburn will be back next week. So thanks for tuning in, listeners. Here's Harry Chapin. Here's WOLD here on your Drive Time.
Hello, honey, it's me. What did you think when you heard me back on the radio? What did the kids say when they knew it was their long-lost daddy-o? Remember how we listened to the radio and I said that's the place to be, and how I got the job as an FM jock.